ते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 17, Punishment and Reward of Kali, text number 18. Na vayam klesha bijani yataha siu purusarsava purusham tam vijanimo bhakya veda vimohitaha navayam klesha bijani yataksyu purusharsava purusham tam vijanimo Bhakya Veda Vimohitaha Navayam Klesa Bijani Yataksyu Purusharsava Purusham Tam Bijani Mo Bhakya Veda Vimohita Navayam Klesa Bijani Yataksyu purusharsava purusham tam bijanimo bhakya veda vimohitaha. Ladies, Na, not, bayam, we, klesa bijani, the cause of sufferings, Yataha, where from? Siu, it so happens. Purusha Rishabha, O greatest of all human beings. Purusham, the person. Tam, that. Vijani Maha, no. Bhakya Beda, difference of opinion. Vimohitaha, bewildered by. Translation. O greatest among human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our sufferings, because we are bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. Translation, please repeat. O greatest among human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our sufferings, because we are bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. There are many theoretical philosophers in the world who put forth their own theories of cause and effect, especially about the cause of suffering and its effect on different living beings. Generally, there are six great philosophers. Kanada, the author of Vaisheshika philosophy, Gautama, the author of logic, Patanjali, the author of mystic yoga, Kapila, the author of Sankhya philosophy, Jaimini, the author of Karma Mimamsa, and Vyasti, the author of Vedanta Darshan. Although the bull, or the personality of religion, and the cow, the personality of the earth, knew perfectly well that the personality of Kali was the direct cause of their sufferings, still, as devotees of the Lord, they knew well also that without the sanction of the Lord, no one could inflict trouble upon them. According to the Padma Puran, our present trouble is due to the fructifying of seedling sins. But even those seedling sins are gradually fade away by execution of pure devotional service. Thus, even if the devotees see the mischief mongers, they do not accuse them for the sufferings inflicted. They take it for granted that the mischief monger is made to act by some indirect cause, and therefore they tolerate the sufferings, thinking themselves to be God-given in small doses, for otherwise the suffering should have been greater. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to get a statement of accusation against the direct mischief monger, but they declined to give it on the above-mentioned grounds. Speculative philosophers, however, do not recognize the sanction of the Lord. They define to find out the cause of sufferings in their own way, as will be described in the following verses. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, such speculators themselves bewildered, and thus they cannot know the ultimate cause of all causes is the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead. Savayam klesha bijani yatasyu purusharsava purusham tam bijani mo vakya veda vimohitaha. O greatest among human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our sufferings, because we are bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadandigam Aridanastrinandantai Vridam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padam Bujo Dulisyam Janma Janmani Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Panchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. I was born in the darkest of ignorance with my eyes closed shut, but my spiritual master has opened my eyes with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge Therefore, I offer my humble obeisances at his lotus feet. So this verse is very interesting because Prakshit Maharaj is desiring to get a direct accusation against the personality of Kali, but the cow and the bull are reluctant to give such an accusation. And ultimately, Prabhupada describes here in the purport, because they're devotees of the Lord, therefore they know that without the sanction of the Lord, nothing can happen. This is, we're very far away from this. Immediately, as soon as someone offends us, we're ready to fight. Well, we see the wonderful example of the cow and the bull. They're attributing it to nothing. Nobody can harm us unless it is sanctioned by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Prabhupada says, devotee should be very tolerant. He should accept whatever suffering comes as minimization. Because as soon as one takes to devotional service of the Lord, the karma circuit is cut. See, the Prabhupada gives the example of the fan. Blades of the fan. I was thinking it's Hindi. The blades of the fan are spinning, but as soon as we pull the plug, they still continue to spin, but now they have no power behind them. And gradually they slow down and finally stop. So as soon as we begin devotional service to the Lord, whatever is happening to us, it is being given directly by the Supreme Personality of God. It's not due to karma. Just like my first temple president, we were just in Boulder. My first temple president was a wonderful devotee named Hari Nama. And before Boulder, he had tried to start a temple in Santa Fe. And they invited Prabhupada so many times to come there. And so finally Prabhupada agreed that he would come. Now Prabhupada was going from New York to Montreal to Chicago, then to Santa Fe, then on to Los Angeles. So now we fly around like anything, but those days we didn't have so much money. And that time Govindadasi was cooking and serving Srila Prabhupada, so they didn't have money for her to go all those different places with Prabhupada. So they sent her in the straight line. Straight line was New York to Santa Fe, then Santa Fe to LA. So meanwhile, Harinama, he'd been bitten by a black widow on his leg, and his leg became very swollen. He had a tremendous fever. He was practically delirious. And at that point, Govindadasi showed up. And this is just after Prabhupada had his heart attack or stroke or whatever it was in New York. So Govindadasi, she immediately went to a town to consult with the doctors. Because Santa Fe, just like I was just now in Denver, they're both mile-high cities. So the altitude is very high. So she came back, she told Harinam, all the doctors say that if someone has a heart condition, this altitude is very bad. So we can't have Prabhupada come here. He must go straight to L.A. So anyway, Harinami shouldn't have listened to her, but he was completely delirious with his fever. So they decided that Prabhupada should go straight to L.A. and not come to Santa Fe. So there wasn't any airport in Santa Fe. This airport was in Albuquerque. So they had a little Volkswagen Beetle, if anybody remembers those creatures. Now you know how old I am. And they drove up to Albuquerque. And they greeted Prabhupada in the airport. And Harinami paid his obeisance, but he had his leg and he couldn't bend his leg properly. It was sticking out funny. So Prabhupada said, "What's wrong with your leg?" "Oh, it doesn't matter." That time they called him Swamiji. "Swamiji, but you must immediately go to L.A." And Prabhupada said, "You boys invite me. You send so many letters. I should come. As soon as I come, you want me to go away." Then Govindadasi blurted up, "But Swamiji, this altitude is very bad for people with heart conditions." And then Prabhupada said, "Oh, you think that I'm an old man?" Now they were completely flustered. They didn't know what to do. So then they were discussing amongst themselves, what should we do? So Prabhupada said, "Well, what do you think we should do?" And Harinama said, "I don't know, Swamiji, what do you think we should do?" "No, what do you think we should do?" And Govinda Dasi blurted out, "But Swamiji, you're the pure devotee. What do you think we should do?" Prabhupada very humbly said, "That does not matter. What do you think we should do?" So then they realize they're foolish. They sent so many letters to Prabhupada that he should come. Now Prabhupada came and they're sending him away. So they realize that actually Prabhupada should come. So they got in this little Volkswagen bug. Govindadasi was in the back. Harinam was driving. Prabhupada was sitting next to him. And he was thinking, the whole time he was thinking, when Prabhupada comes, I'm going to ask so many questions, you know. And now Prabhupada's sitting right next to him and he couldn't think of any question. All he could say was, "Oh, Swamiji, it's so nice to have your association." And Prabhupada would smile and say, "Yes." So humble, he would say, "Yes, and it is so nice to have your association." And then he would try to think of a question to ask. He couldn't think of, everything seemed silly to ask. So then he said, "Swamiji, it's so nice to have your association." "Yes, and it is so nice to have your association." Then Santa Fe is very famous for its sunsets. But he said, for his pure devotee, Krishna put on a special colorful sunset that night. So Harinam said, "I never saw a sunset like that." Then they got back to the temple. Now our god sister, Mahamaya, she's written a book, "Prabhupada is Coming." And somehow or other, if Prabhupada's coming, things that take 3 months to do get done in 3 days. I often wonder if Prabhupada wondered why it smelled like new paint wherever he went in the world. But so now Prabhupada is not coming, so you can imagine the state of the temple. And everybody on the sidewalk, there was just a few devotees, but a couple of visitors were there. Tosan Krishna was there, he'd just become a devotee. Some visitors were there, and all of a sudden Prabhupada got out of this Volkswagen bug, and everyone knew that Prabhupada's not coming. And so they were shocked, you know. Then Prabhupada came into the temple room, the Jagannath deities were there. I was very happy. Those are the first Jagannath deities I ever saw in my life. So I was very happy to be there in Denver with them just now. So then he paid his obeisances to Jagannath. Then immediately went into the kitchen. You can imagine what the kitchen looks like if Prabhupada's not coming. But there was temples on the East Coast, there's temples on the West Coast, but this was in the middle. So this was like Prabhupada had conquered another kingdom. You know, so he wanted to see his new temple. So he went into the kitchen, he looked around, he went into the Brahmacharya Ashram. You can imagine what the Brahmacharya Ashram looks like if Prabhupada's not coming. And Harinam, but Prabhupada, nobody knew. Prabhupada just immediately poked his head in the bathroom also to see what was there. Then he came back to the temple room and he sat on a big cushion just like a little cowherd boy. And he opened up that famous white bag that we read about in Lilamrit. And he pulled out some tin foil and he had some basin laddus. But since it's hot in that area of the world, they had melted, so they weren't round, so nobody knew what they were. And this is very beginning, no one knew what a basin laddu was. But somebody had given them. So he opened it up, and just like a little cowherd boy with his cowherd friends, he was giving it to the, passing out to the devotees who were all sitting around him on this big cushion. And Harinama thought it was sweet peanut butter or something. So there was one hippie boy there. He looked at Prabhupada and he said, "Swamiji, who is Krishna?" And Prabhupada gave such a nonchalant answer, just like, I mean, as if everybody knows. You don't know? Everybody knows. He just said, "Krishna, he's the little cowherd boy in Vrindavan who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Just answer like that, just like that. "You don't know? Krishna's a little cowherd boy in Vrindavan who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So anyway, after that, Prabhupada began to inquire about Harinama's leg. And when he found out that he'd been bitten by some black widow, he said, "Actually, Krishna has minimized your karma. By your past karma, you were supposed to lose this leg. But it is minimized. It's a little swollen and you have fever. It is minimized." So whatever is happening to devotees is not due to karma. So here the cow and the bull, they're bimohita, they're bewildered by the different philosophies. And Prabhupada mentions all these different philosophies. So I decided to do a little research. In the 10th canto, 87th chapter, verse 25, the prayers of the personified Vedas, the humble servants of His Divine Grace describe these different philosophies and how Vedanta is superior. In traditional Indian philosophy, the followers of Vaisheshika, Nyaya, Sankhya, Yoga, and Mimamsa philosophies all have their own erroneous ideas which the personified Vedas point out in this prayer. The Vaisheshikas say that the visible universe is created from an original stock of atoms, Janim Asataha. As Kanada Rishi's Vaisheshika Sutras state, Nityam Parimandalam, that which of the smallest size, the atom, is eternal. Kanada and his followers also postulate eternality for other non-atomic entities, including the souls who become embodied, and even a supreme soul. But in Vaisheshika cosmology, the souls and the supreme supersoul play only token roles in the atomic production of the universe. Srila Krishna Dwaipana Vyasadeva criticizes this position in his Vedanta Sutras. Ubayata pina karmatas tad abhavaha. According to this sutra, one cannot claim that at the time of creation, atoms first combine together because they are impelled by some karmic impulse adhering in the atoms themselves. Since atoms by themselves in their primeval state before combining into complex objects have no ethical responsibility that might lead them to acquire pious and sinful reactions. Atoms can't be the cause of the creation, because we see there's the reactions of karma. Karma means somebody did something responsible, but atoms have no free will, and they're not doers. They have no ethical responsibility that might lead them to acquire pious and sinful reactions. Nor can the initial combination of atoms be explained as a result of residual karma of the living entities who lie dormant prior to creations, since these reactions are each jiva's own and cannot be transferred from them even to other jivas, what to speak of inert atoms. Alternately, the phrase Janim Asata can be taken to allude to the yoga philosophy of Patanjali Rishi, inasmuch as his yoga sutras teach one how to achieve the transcendental status of Brahmanhood by mechanical process, exercise, and meditations. Patanjali's yoga method is here called Asat, because it ignores the essential aspect of devotion, surrender to the will of the Supreme Person, as Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Ashradaya hutam datam tapas taptam kritam chayat asadit yuchate parta nachatat pretyano iha. Anything done as sacrifice, charity, or penance without faith in the Supreme, O son of Prita, is impermanent. It is called asad and is useless both in this life and the next. The Yoga Sutras acknowledge the personality of Godhead in an oblique way, but only as a helper whom the advancing yogi can utilize. Ishvara pranidhanadva. Devotional meditation of God is yet another means of achieving concentration. Yoga Sutras 123. In contrast, Bhadarayana Vyasadeva's philosophy of Vedanta emphasizes devotional servant not only as a primary means of liberation, but also identical with liberation itself. Aprayantatapihi drishtam. Worship of the Lord continues up to the point of liberation. Indeed, goes on in the liberated state also, as the Vedas reveal. Vedanta Sutra 4.1.12. Gautama Rishi in his Nyaya Sutras proposes that one can attain liberation by negating both illusion and unhappiness. Dukkha janma pravitti dosha mitya jananam jnanam utaro tapayetad antarabhavad apavarga. By successively dispelling false conceptions, bad character, entangling action, rebirth, and misery, the disappearance of one of these allowing the disappearance of the next, one can achieve final liberation. Nyaya Sutra 112. But since Nyaya philosophers believe that awareness is not an essential quality of the soul, they teach that the liberated soul has no consciousness. The Nyaya idea of liberation thus puts the soul in the condition of a dead stone. This attempt by the Nyaya philosophers to kill the soul's innate consciousness is here called Sato Mrityam by the personified Vedas. But Vedanta Sutra unequivocally states, Gyota Eva, the Jiva is always a knower. Although the soul in truth, both conscious and active, the proponents of Sankhya philosophy wrongly separate these two functions of the living force. Atmani cha yecha bidam, ascribing consciousness to the soul, Purusha, and activity to the material nature, Prakriti. according to this Sankhya Karika 9:20, thus, since the apparent differences between the Purushas are only superficial due to the various modes of nature that cover them, the Purusha's true status is proven to be that of a witness, characterized by his separateness, his passive indifferences, difference, his status of being an observer, and his inactivity. Thus, by contact with the soul, the unconscious subtle body seems to be conscious, while the soul appears to be the doer, although he is aloof from the activity of nature's modes. Srila Vyasadeva refutes this idea in the section of the Vedanta Sutra 2.3.31-39 that begins, Karta Sastarta Vatat. The jiva soul must be a performer of actions because the injunction of the skipper must have some purpose. Acharya Baladev Vidyabhushan in his Govindabhasa explains, the jiva, not the modes of nature, is the doer. Why? Because the injunctions of scripture must have some purpose. For example, such scriptural injunctions are swargo kamo yajeta. One who desires to attain heaven should perform ritual sacrifice. And atmanam eva lokam upasita. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. One should worship with the aim of attaining the spiritual kingdom are meaningful only if a conscious doer exists. If the modes of nature were the doer, these statements would serve no purpose. After all, scriptural injunctions engage the living entity in performing prescribed actions by convincing them that he can act to bring about certain enjoyable results. Such a mentality cannot be aroused in the inert modes of nature. Jaimini Rishi, in his Purvamimamsa Sutra, presents material work and its results as the whole of reality. Vipanamritam. He and later proponents of Karma Mimamsa philosophy teach that material existence is endless, that there is no liberation, for then the cycle of karma is perpetual, and the best one can aim for is higher birth among the demigods. Therefore, I say the whole purpose of the Vedas is to engage human beings in rituals for creating good karma, and consequently the mature soul's prime responsibility is to ascertain the exact meaning of the Vedas' sacrificial injunctions and execute them. Duty is that which is indicated by the injunctions of the Vedas. The Vedanta Sutra, however, especially in the fourth chapter, which deals with life's ultimate goal, elaborately describes the soul's potential for achieving liberation from birth and death, while it subordinates ritual sacrifice to the role of helping one become qualified to receive spiritual knowledge. As stated there, Vedanta Sutra 4.1.16, Agnihotradi tu tarkarya vaiva tad darsanat. The Agnihotra and other Vedic sacrifices are meant only for producing knowledge, as the statements of the Vedas show. And the very last words of Vedanta Sutra proclaim, Anavritti sabdat, the liberated soul never returns to this world as promised by the revealed scriptures. Thus the fallacious conclusions of speculative philosophers prove that even great scholars and sages are often bewildered by the misuse of their own God-given intelligence. So anyway, that explains something about these different philosophies. So they're different ideas about the supreme cause of all causes, but only since the cow and the bull are devotees, Prabhupada explains here, they accept the Vedic conclusion that Krishna is the supreme personality of God and he is the cause of all causes. This can only be learned if we receive knowledge through disciplic succession, guru parampara. Parampara means paramparam, paramparam, from one to the next, one to the next. It comes down, just like we know, first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Rida. The Brahma, he received knowledge from Krishna. So these speculative philosophers, they're trying by the ascending process. By the ascending process, we'll never get complete knowledge. Prabhupada says, no one can establish himself as a muni or philosopher unless he can defeat the other. So they're busy trying to defeat each other, but never coming to the ultimate conclusion. And mainly, they try to climb the peaks of transcendental knowledge, but they slip and fall into the abyss. Sometimes people are climbing the mountains, they slip and they fall into the abyss. So generally, they fall into the abyss of Mayavad philosophy. They can never come to the conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That we get from a descending process of receiving knowledge through Guru Parampara. Just like in Denver, we were discussing that verse. Tateinu kampa susamikshamana bunjana ivatmakrite vipakam ridvagvavaviridayam vidiram zamaste jiveta jomukti pade sadaya bhak. So we know daya generally means mercy. The Sanskrit words have different meanings in different places. Daya also means inheritance. So the purport of this verse from Lord Brahma's prayers in the 10th canto is that one who patiently waits for Krishna's mercy, suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds patiently, he becomes the inheritor of the kingdom of God. So daya means inheritance. And in Sanskrit, we like to add prefixes and suffix, just like we have kirtan, then we make it sankirtan to make it more fancy. So we have the word sampradaya, two suffixes we have, pra and sampradaya. Means that our previous acharyas, they have gathered a huge wealth of knowledge and devotion. And by receiving that knowledge, coming in that sampradaya, we inherit all of that knowledge and devotion. We don't have to do, all these guys are doing trouble and trouble. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's whole, Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavam maham prapadyante vasude sarviti. That after many births, when they finally come to the real conclusion, oh, Vasudeva is everything, they surrender to me. So we don't have to go through all that work by joining the sampradaya. And sampradaya is such a thing, also in the same 10th canto, it describes that all the great sages in the past, by accepting the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, they crossed over this ocean of material existence. And Jiva Goswami says, now somebody may say, the boat has gone to the other side, what will happen to us? We're stuck here on this side. He said, no, that boat is still present. Krishna's lotus feet are still present in the form of sampradaya. And they're so powerful, sampradaya is so powerful, that as soon as you approach the boat, the whole ocean of material existence becomes like a hoof print and you step across. So don't worry, boat is still waiting here on our side. It's not that all the sages in the past, they took it across and we're left here alone. But it's still sitting on our side. If you just approach the sampradaya, then the whole ocean of material existence becomes nothing but a water and a hoof print of a calf, and we can easily cross beyond. So this is our conclusion, and there's also a conclusion of the cow and the bull. They'll discuss these different philosophies now, but we should just receive knowledge through disciplic succession, and we achieve perfection very easily. So any questions? Don't ask me about these different philosophies. I'm not a scholar. I'm a devotee. I just read whatever I found. The worshippers of?
On another occasion here in Los Angeles, 1973, Prabhupada was walking on Venice Beach and somebody brought up something about the Bible, and Prabhupada said, actually, the Bible is written by the saint, this saint, that. It is not what Jesus Christ said. Jesus Christ said, thou shalt not kill, but that they are doing. But if we tell them that, they'll kill us. You know, something like that. So it seems like Prabhupada, on certain occasions, would say something that sort of supported the idea that it's a stepping stone towards Krishna consciousness. On other occasions, he would just kind of blast it out of the water. So how do you reconcile the two things?
Well, Prabhupada said that this ordinary speculation is just like beating the husk of the rice. You won't get anything from it. But he said philosophical speculation means we know the end is Krishna, so we try to find out how the end is Krishna. So sometimes we see things from different points of view, but the end is Krishna consciousness. It was like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was Visvambar in a school, he was very expert at presenting so many things, and then he would establish some point, and then he'd turn around and disestablish that point. So sometimes in our search for the Supreme, we see things from different points of view. But the open end is to become Krishna conscious.
So it's just part of an overall preaching strategy, Prabhupada?
Yeah.
Okay.
Arjita.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for a nice presentation as usual. There's the tradition and then there are the followers. So you have to examine each statement in that light, looking at the tradition and then looking at the followers, so-called followers. It's just like in Hinduism, so-called. If somebody is not really a devotee, then their apparent worship of deity forms is idol worship. It's idol worship. If there's no, Prabhupada made that clear, if there's no devotion, no feeling of devotion to the Lord, then their so-called, which a lot of Hindus do, they have sometimes at home even silver, gold forms of the Lord, but they're not worshiping as devotees. So it's idol worship. So it's the same thing in the Christian tradition. If you're following the actual conclusion of the tradition, which Jesus Christ gave very clearly, love the Lord thy God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul. Like, so if you're actually following it in that way, then it's not a bad tradition. Bhaktivinoda Thakur even said, don't disturb them in their understanding. You can try to elevate them from the small dictionary to the big dictionary, but at least the sentiment is there. I asked Prabhupada on one morning walk, the only morning walk I went on, I asked him about that in the Christianity there's this concept of immaculate conception, that Mary gave birth to Jesus without touch of a man. So Prabhupada said, yes, but there has to be a father. There's no question of child without father. So maybe the father, so-called father Joseph, wasn't the real father, but God was the father. So God impregnated her, in other words. So there has to be a father. So, you know, their tradition is, there's some truth there in their tradition. They just don't themselves now, the current followers, understand everything that's in that tradition. And therefore, it's not satisfying. That's why Prabhupada said, why aren't they going to, like this very building, he said, why aren't they coming here? Nobody was coming here. That's why you sold it to us. But now they're coming in droves. Why? Because we're giving them the absolute truth.
Yes, thank you very much. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhuji.
Thank you very much for the wonderful class, Prabhu. So, Srila Prabhupada, he was mentioning there are six kinds of philosophers in the past. I'm just wondering, does our modern philosophers have any relationship with these six kinds of philosophers in the past or not?
Well, there may be some similarities. Just like you're saying, the one philosophy says atoms are the cause of creation. So that's basically modern science. The material existence is eternal. And like I said, I'm not a scholar, so... I just accept the conclusions of Srila Prabhupada, that's all.
They were saying Patanjali was one of the great philosophers. So I was, as far as I know, Patanjali practiced dhyana and pranayama to get to the heights that he did. But is he part of your guys' tradition? I'm new, so I'm not really exactly sure, you know, how you guys see him.
Well, he was following Vedic tradition, but his conclusion that just like he said, that God is just a helper. Actually, God is the goal. And he's just saying that devotion is an assistant to help us concentrate the mind. And we're saying that the goal is Krishna. The goal is devotion. This is like Prabhupada explained there, that even after liberation, we continue serving the Lord. We enter the spiritual sky and we serve the Lord. So just like you see every day the girls are here stringing the garlands. In the spiritual sky, they're also stringing garlands. In the kitchen back here, the people are cooking. In the spiritual sky, Prabhupada said one time, he said, of course, there are desire trees there. They can get anything they want from the desire tree. But because they love Krishna, they cook from scratch. So cooking is going on there, cooking is going on here. There's no difference between the girls who are stringing the garlands here and the gopis stringing the garlands in the spiritual world. Only difference is here and there. But the activity is completely spiritual activity. So devotion is not a means. The Gyanis say that devotion is just a means to get knowledge. But our goal is devotion. And the result of our devotion is we get more devotion. Well, the result of our service, we get more service. Service will never end. The difference, the yoga process is a difference between the, probably use the example of the cat and the monkey. If you go to Vrindavan, then certain time of year you'll see all the monkeys have little babies. And the babies, they clutch on to the mother's chest. And the mother's jumping from tree to tree, but they're holding on by their own power, which is very less. So sometimes you see the mother jumps from one branch to the next and the baby goes to the ground and dies. So that's like the yoga practice. By his own effort, he's trying to reach the goal. Whereas the cat, she picks up her kitten by the neck, but it is... The cat is very strong, so she's not going to drop the kitten. So the process of bhakti is we're of course we make endeavor, just like in the Damodari, the two fingers were there. One was our endeavor, another was Krishna's mercy. So we're depending on Krishna's mercy. So Krishna pulls us up, just like the cat takes her little kitten from one place to another place. So that's the difference. Yes.
Thank you. So in our tradition, we have this idea that somebody else can take responsibility for the sinful reactions of another person. Like when somebody gets initiated, we hear this thing, sometimes the spiritual master might get sick because too many sinful reactions of his, or taking on too many disciples. Vasudev Dat prayed to Lord Chaitanya that he was so disturbed by the how much people were suffering, he wanted to take the reactions of all their sinful activities so that they could be liberated. And he would stay here and suffer, but they could go back to Godhead. So that idea is there in Vaishnava philosophy or Vedic philosophy. So my question is this, that so in Christianity they have this idea that Jesus Christ died for the sins of the entire human race. And so do we acknowledge that as a valid theological principle, and our only problem is that the Christians continue to sin, or do we reject that as a theological misconception?
No, we say he was a guru, so he was taking the sins. Whether he was taking for the whole world, that's maybe our contention. But this idea of one accepting the guru is the same principle, that one must approach the spiritual master and he will free one from his sins.
So we give validity to that within the parameters of our, Vaishnava Vedic understanding.
I don't know. I never heard any discussion on this, so I regularly say whatever I said.
Thank you very much for a nice class. I just wanted to go one comment back to the devotee over here. And I just wanted to add something on to what you had stated. One of the chief and prominent differences between the bhakti process and the Patanjali process is that Patanjali process is basically a very... the words jumped out of my mind. But in the Patanjali, it is a very mechanical, exactly. It's a mechanical process, and it's like your A then goes to B, and there's no really feeling involved in it. You don't have to love Krishna, you don't have to even believe in Krishna, but you just do these series of different actions and mudras types of postures and so forth, and each of these has a specific effect upon either the different chakras in the body, and those chakras, as they are opened, lead to another, and one gets some kind of a realization, but he cannot get the realization that a bhakta gets, because the bhakta employs or uses or feels love for the Lord, or he's developing that love, and the Lord himself is helping the devotee develop that by his grace, by his kindness and sweetness. So the Lord loves relationship, and he assists us in the development of that relationship. Whereas the Patanjali system, it has nothing to, although the Lord is maybe the ultimate goal, although there is not, as far as I know from my own personal experience, it is usually either impersonal or it may be super soul. But as far as the relationships that a devotee has, for example, like the gopis with Krishna, or Uddhava with Krishna, these loving relationships which become sweeter and sweeter as a devotee grows and matures and develops are not present in that Patanjali system. It is simply an experience, and that's it. Whereas in bhakti, it is more than just an experience. It's an ever-increasing, ever-evolving, ever-developing. One may see Krishna in a certain way, and as he grows and develops, he may see Krishna in a still more beautiful, more lovable, more adorable way. So, in other words, the bhakti process is ever-increasing and ever-building, ever-evolving for the individual. It's never stasis, it's never static. This is an important point.
It sounds like Patanjali's system is impersonal system, right? Okay.
The only personality that there may be is in meditation. In meditation, they can see the super soul, you see, but it never goes beyond just seeing the super soul. There's no relationship there. And one draws power from the super soul and can do amazing things, sometimes various miracles. But those miracles really have no true or deep or eternal value. It's just like a magic trick, so to speak. Whereas a devotee can also do miracles, but they are done through prayer generally. And that miracle comes as a consequence or as a result of the Lord giving his grace to that devotee. And from that grace, the devotee does that. But he never takes credit for it. He never believes that he is powerful. The devotee always feels he's insignificant, and he really is not the doer, and that anything great coming out of him is this direct result of Krishna's kindness, his grace, and answering his prayer.
So if there's no other questions, we can all fall down at the very soft and wonderful lotus feet of that great personality who's given us the conclusion of the Vedas, devotion to Sri Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.